Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering shows from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and in this hour, crime. Later on, we hear the four-star Playhouse from 1949, but right now, the first of two broadcasts featuring William Conrad as the villain in this episode of The Whisperer, starring Carlton Young. From July 8, 1951 on NBC, this broadcast marks the first in the brief time it was on NBC as a summer replacement show, the episode called Tea Time for Teenagers.
The Whisperer, starring Carlton Young. The Whisperer, a brilliant man who, losing his voice in an accident which crushed his vocal cords, worked his way deep within the crime syndicate to help destroy it from within. To the underworld, his familiar rattling hiss is the voice of authority, to be obeyed without question. Then a miracle of surgery performed by Dr. Benjamin Lee restored his natural voice, enabling him to resume his real identity. Now, as Philip Galt, brilliant young attorney, he skirts the thin edges of death, living his dual role. For as the Whisperer, he sets in motion the forces of the syndicate in Central City. Then, as Philip Galt uses his knowledge to fight the organized network of crime which seeks to control the fate of millions in cities and towns across the nation. The only person besides Dr. Lee who knows the Whisperer's true identity is the doctor's nurse, Ellen Norris, who is listening now as the Whisperer completes his call to his superiors in the crime syndicate in New York City.
New York.
Central City reporting. Instructions conveyed to Scarelli will keep you informed.
Oh, Phil, did you have to give those instructions?
Yes, Ellen. As soon as I receive them from my superiors in the syndicate, I must pass them on.
But marijuana means broken lives, heartbreak for parents, too.
I know that, Ellen, but if I refuse, the syndicate will liquidate me before the day is over.
How will Scarelli start this tragedy?
Well, he'll find a high school boy or girl who is a leader and induce them to start selling marijuana.
Well, couldn't we warn the PTA?
No. We must let Scarelli make his contact, then catch him and his men with enough evidence to send him to prison.
Meanwhile, some boy or girl becomes an addict.
They won't work that way. They'll set up a party, spike the drinks, and when everyone is happy, they'll pass out one or two or as many cigarettes as it takes to get them high.
How terrible.
But until that party, we needn't worry about whoever Scarelli contacts.
Well, that makes me feel somewhat better.
Say, how about leaving the office and having a soda, huh?
Can't. However, if you should just happen, mind you, to come back around 4.
I'll be here with bells on.
That won't be necessary. As you see, we furnish our own bells.
Meanwhile, Scarelli, smartly dressed and spending freely, mixes and mingles with the high school crowd, watching, listening for something which will point out a likely student to become his head marijuana pusher. Then...
They told me you're pretty good on that motorcycle, Scrappy.
Huh? Oh, yeah, I guess I am at that.
My name is Scarelli.
I'm Scrappy Riss.
I got a pretty hot car.
Hey, it's you.
Hiya, Scrappy.
Hiya, Nola. Conserving sweaters and what a goo.
You conserve, I'm starved. Hey, Mike.
Yeah?
Feed that Pete Andrade record a nickel, will you?
George.
He really sends me.
Come down.
I send.
Hey, my bike's outside. How about a spin, huh?
Sorry. Jimmy Bivens is picking me up.
That moldy fig. And how about tonight?
Jimmy Bivens.
I'd kind of counted on it.
You overlooked one thing.
That convertible?
George.
I didn't overlook it. I ignored it.
Your mistake. Never overlook a convertible. Bye. Thanks for the goo.
What's the rush?
Well, there's Jimmy pulling up outside. Don't take any wooden kefavers. Okay, Jimmy.
That's really burning it, huh?
Huh? Oh, you again. Yeah. Jimmy got a Merc 300 with trimmings.
Yeah? How much that job cost?
$1,500.
I know where a hard worker could make that kind of money.
It don't grow on bushes, friend.
The name's Scarelli. How about dropping in tonight and we'll talk it over, huh?
Where?
Main Hotel, room 1201. 8 o'clock?
I'll be there.
Would you mind telling me why you brought me all the way across town to the hangout for that soda?
I love your company.
That I sometimes doubt. No, you had some other reason.
Well, Alan, if I were Scarelli, I'd hang around, ask questions, spot a likely pusher, and then make contact.
And you're going to see if Scarelli has been here?
You're a woman of unusual perception. Park it here, as we used to say in my high school days.
Well, 23 skidoo to you, too.
Name it, Mopes.
Mopes?
Okay, squares.
Well, that I get.
Well, don't lug it. What goes?
Goose?
Goose. What do you want?
Oh.
I've had conversations like this in nightmares.
Look, could we just talk to you?
Jive, dig.
Huh?
Would you humor an old man and just use plain English?
You do speak it.
When I have to.
Splendid. We've found a ground for mutual understanding. Has an older man probably well-dressed?
A gook.
I'll start over. Has a gook been asking...
Waxing.
Okay. Has a gook been waxing a... Don't tell me. Mope?
George.
Who?
Scrappy Riz. The gook's waxing him about a hot rod.
Oh, now I see.
Wanna bet?
Don't expose me. Where does Scrappy live?
834 Canal Street.
Octagon.
Huh?
I said octagon. That means thanks from two squares. Yes?
We'd like to talk to Scrappy, please.
Oh, dear, he isn't in trouble again.
Oh, no, Mrs. Riss. I'm a lawyer, and I wanted to talk with him about working for me in my office.
Oh, well, come in, Mr.
Galt. And this is Miss Norris.
Oh, how do you do? I've wanted Scrappy to go to work. It isn't that he's a bad boy. It's just that he wants so many things and sometimes takes shortcuts to get them. Oh, Scrappy?
I heard what he said, Mom.
Son, I want you to meet...
How much would the job pay?
Well, I could start you at 20 a week.
Chicken feed. I know where I can get...
More? Is that what you were going to say?
Let it go.
Scrappy, easy money usually means risks. The risk of getting caught.
Oh, son, what are you talking about?
I don't know
about?
What he's talking about.
And I hope you never will, Scrappy, but I'm a lawyer. And if you ever need help, consider yourself my client. Good evening, Mrs. Riss. Scrappy.
Bye-bye. Didn't you warn Scrappy?
No, I think he's basically a good kid, but a poor actor. If I warned him, his behavior might put Scarelli on his guard.
Can't we follow Scrappy? Let him lead us to Scarelli?
Look there.
What, do you mean the motorcycle?
How long do you think we could keep up with that? No, Ellen, when the time comes, we'll find another way of contacting Scarelli. Now, come on. I have to make a call to the syndicate.
New York.
Central City reporting.
Go ahead, Central City.
Scarelli has found a good high school contact. He's in love, and his rival owns a hot rod.
Keep us informed.
Phil, every time you use that voice, it gives me goosebumps.
That whisper was the only sound I could make when I first met you.
I know, but I'll never get used to it. Oh, by the way, somehow we've been sidetracked on that soda. Could we...
Later. Right now, we have a date to park in front of Scrappy Riss's house until he returns from his meeting with Scarelli.
But that may be ours.
Well, parking can be fun if it's properly approached.
Oh, no, Mope. I may lag in modern idioms, but some things haven't changed since I left high school.
Where you been, Scarelli?
Setting up a pigeon. He's ripe. He's a tough kid in love, and he wants a hot rod.
Well, sounds like he's already hooked.
Yeah, I'm counting on that. But kids are funny, so...
So, I stand by downstairs just in case, huh?
Yeah, just in case. That's probably him out the back way in a hurry.
Gotcha.
Be right with you. Well, come in, Scrappy. You're right on time.
Hey. Joint's a real McCoy.
$30 a day, Scrappy. Always travel first class. It's the only way to live.
If you have the money.
The right guy always has the money.
And you think that's me, huh?
I do. I've been watching you, Scrappy. You're smart, you're tough, and you're a leader. Here, have a cigarette.
Thanks. Hey, what kind of cigarette is this?
Marijuana.
What's the idea? You're trying to make an addict of me?
At one time, Scrappy, they arrested you for drinking whiskey. But now we're more enlightened, and whiskey is offered for legal sale. Well, in 10 years, the same will be true of marijuana.
I think I'll go now, Mr. Scarelli.
Scrappy, I like you. How would you like to make $200 a week?
$200 a week?
At least.
My old man never made that much.
But you can. We organize 10 groups of 20 friends. Each stick costs 50 cents. At first, your customers will average 3 a week. That's $600 a week.
Yeah, and 10% of 600 is still 60.
Only at first. Once they get the habit,
well,
why...
You can stop right there.
That's merely a figure of speech. Later, they'll enjoy maybe 3 a day, and that's $2,100 a week, or $210 for you.
Oh, no. For this, I'll not go to jail.
Just a minute.
You intend to try to stop me?
No, of course not, son. Of course not. Come on, I'll give you time to think it over. Now, just to show you there's no hard feeling, Scrappy, I'll give you a drive in my car. Here it is. Did he like it?
Who wouldn't?
Cost $20,000. British job, 362. Slip under the wheel, twirl it around the block.
Hey, you really mean it?
Of course I do. Get in and I'll brief you, and then you can burn the rubber.
Hey, this baby really turns over.
Yeah. Do a power turn around that corner by my hotel.
Okay. Here goes.
Good boy. You can really drive. Hey, look out. Look out.
Easy.
Yes, son. He's dead.
What am I going to do?
Well, if we report this, you got 20 years.
But it was an accident.
That's why I'm going to help you. Now help me put his body in the trunk, and I'll get rid of it where they'll never find it.
That might get you in trouble.
I'll take that risk, provided you'll be my head pusher.
You mean marijuana? But I already told you.
Either that or 20 years, which will it be? Hurry.
All right. I'll sell you marijuana.
Philip Galt, known to the underworld as the Whisperer, has ordered the introduction of marijuana into the high school. Now, in his real identity as Philip Galt, he and Ellen are parked outside Scrappy's house when an imported car drives up.
It's Scrappy, all right.
I've never seen that car before.
It's bound to be Scarelli.
No doubt about it.
Hadn't we better follow him?
I think it's more important to talk to Scrappy. Scrappy!
Huh? What? Who's there?
It's Mr. Galt.
I want to talk to you.
Are you in trouble?
No. No. Why should I be?
Well, just remember what I said earlier today about being your friend. Let me know if you get in over your head.
Get in? That's a laugh. I'm already in 10 times deeper than that.
Something dreadful has happened tonight. You should have stopped it.
That was my first mistake, Ellen. My second was in not following Scarelli. Now we've got to find him if it takes all night. Checked every motel, garage, and hotel in town. That foreign car has disappeared.
Could we stop for a goo before you drop me off at my place?
Of course. Come on, Mope.
That all-night diner looks wonderful to me.
In you go. Two hamburgers with everything.
Did we overlook any place where Scarelli might...
Ellen, no names.
I'm sorry.
Pardon me. With my girth, I need more room to pass.
Oh, sorry.
Well, thank you very much.
Phil, I've seen it.
Oh.
That man going into the forest. He was listening to the accident.
Scrappy, awake at 3:15?
What do you want?
Man named Galt is searching for my car. It's hidden at the casino, but if he finds it, those fingerprints will hang in.
But, Mr. Scarelli...
You must get rid of Galt.
No.
I'll be at your house by 3:25. Be ready.
But I...
They can't hang you any higher for two murders than for one.
The goo was delicious.
Well, in that case, do you mind if I stop and pick up something at my place?
No. I'm used to joyriding at 3:30 in the morning.
I'll only be a moment.
Phil!
Keep down!
Shoot again!
No! Leave me alone!
Getting away.
Scarelli is, yes, but Scrappy shot at me.
Mr. Gold!
Yes?
I'm sorry!
Come on inside, kid. We've got a lot to talk over. Staying at the main hotel.
Phil, what are you going to do?
Scrappy, we have a job to do. Can you regain his confidence?
I'll try.
His next move will be to set up a party where he'll pass out marijuana. Can you learn the time and place and phone me?
Yes, sir, but what happens when this is over?
Then, Scrappy, it looks as though you'll have to stand trial for manslaughter. Now, I think you'd better go home.
After Scrappy leaves, Philip Galt dials the main hotel. As the receiver at the other end is lifted, he speaks in the voice of the Whisperer.
Mr. Scarelli, please. When? Just now. Thank you.
He's checked out?
10 minutes ago. That means he knows we've talked to Scrappy.
Who are you calling?
Scrappy's mother. He must stay at home until I can get there. His life depends on it.
Welcome home, Scrappy.
Huh?
You bungled it.
Yeah, I know it.
Did Galt see you tonight?
Oh, no.
All right. Tomorrow night, we're giving a party at the casino for 20 of your friends.
I'll tell them tomorrow.
You'll call them with my gun in your ribs.
Huh?
When you finish, you'll be locked in the refrigerator vault.
Why are you doing this?
I saw you come out of Galt's place. Scrappy, your number is really up.
Did you find him?
Well, I've looked all day without a trace. But I did learn that Scarelli's giving a party tonight for teenagers at the casino.
The casino?
My guess is that Scrappy's a prisoner there.
What time is the party?
It's already underway. I'm going out now and try to rescue Scrappy. Ellen, phone Lieutenant Denvers. Tell him to surround the casino. When I fire two shots, have his men crash in. Now, you got that?
Two shots. Right.
Good girl. It must be timed right. Too soon, no evidence. Too late, a lot of fine kids will be headed for a place I'd rather they didn't go.
Good evening, Mr. Galt. I've been waiting for more than an hour.
Sorry if I've kept you waiting, Scarelli.
I'll take your gun. Thank you. Come on. As you can hear, my party is in progress.
So it would seem.
In here.
Very substantial.
It's the meat storage vault. However, the walls are thin enough that you can hear the happenings. And later... Well, we'll discuss that later. Now, if you'll excuse me, my guests are waiting.
Mr. Galt?
You all right, Scrappy?
I'm half frozen. I was afraid you wouldn't get here in time.
Has he passed out any marijuana?
No, but he's getting ready to. Hey, listen.
Are you kids having fun? All right,
Then I've got something you're going to really go for. Everybody step up and get a free cigarette.
Oh, no, we got to do something. Those kids don't know what's about to happen.
The police may be here by now.
Police? You got a signal?
Two gunshots.
Oh, you're going to get a gun.
Move this empty cardboard carton over there while I break this window with this chicken.
Chicken?
It's frozen, hard as a hammer.
Here's the carton. What now?
Your belt.
All right. But why?
I'll double it. Now stand back. I've heard they do this on the radio. I hope it wasn't just publicity.
It worked.
Yeah. Oh, Bill, where are you?
Over here in the refrigerator.
Refrigerator?
Open the door. Scarelli must have got away.
Here.
You. Come here. Come here.
Come
here. Come here.
Thanks. Stay back.
Come on. All right, come on. Come here. Come on. All right, you kids. Pass those cigarettes in the fireplace. Move now. I'll shoot the first one who tells where they got one.
He's getting rid of the evidence.
You over there, move.
Scarelli.
What?
Drop that gun.
Go.
Drop it, Scarelli. All right, everybody, it's all over. The police will be here.
And take over.
10 cents.
Well, this is a haul. Outside, we grab the drivers and the marijuana, and inside, we find Philip Galt, boy murderer.
That man has narcotics on his body, and he shot first, Lieutenant.
You wish?
I have 30 witnesses to prove it.
We'll pass that for now. How'd you know about this unless you're implicated in the marijuana business?
My client, Scrappy Wrist, told me.
Oh, is that right, Scrappy?
Yes, sir.
Then you must be implicated in this, too.
No, sir, I...
My client is innocent of any wrong intent. He was coerced.
No use, Mr. Gore. I can't take it any longer. I killed a man.
Oh. In that case, Scrappy, you're under arrest.
Lieutenant, before you do a foolish thing, can we see the prisoners?
Well, it won't help Scrappy, but... Morrison, bring in the prisoners.
Do any of them look familiar, Scrappy?
What? Hey, can't be. It's the man I ran over.
There's the man you thought you ran over. He and Scarelli pulled the old insurance gag. This man screamed, acted as though the car hit him, and fell.
Yeah, but I helped put him in the trunk.
And we're too excited to notice that he wasn't even injured.
All right. You, what's your name?
Ed.
Is this true? Talk up.
Yeah, and that's all I'm going to say.
You said enough. Well, Galt, looks like you're clean. What are you going to do with these kids?
I'd suggest that you take them to the station, Lieutenant. Call their parents and show them how narrowly Central City averted a tragedy. You might also suggest that the PTA show some of the fine educational films available on marijuana and how it leads to a worse addiction. Tonight's event should prove that it can happen here. Only an alerted and enlightened public can prevent its further spread.
Phil, now that it's over, can I please have that soda?
Just as soon as I contact the syndicate. Just take a minute. I've already given the operator... Shh.
Yes? Central City reporting.
Go ahead, Central City.
Scarelli bungled. The entire gang captured. The public is vigorously aroused. I advise that present plans be discontinued.
We will take such action. For new instructions, call Chicago at midnight.
Chicago at midnight. The Whisperer.
The Whisperer is based upon stories and characters created by Stetson Humphrey. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
The Whisperer, on Tuned to Yesterday from July 8, 1951 on NBC. You're listening to an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now, in that last broadcast, William Conrad portrayed the villain. He's best known on radio for portraying U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon on Gunsmoke throughout the 50s and early 60s. And in the year of that broadcast alone, before Gunsmoke fame, he was playing character parts on Let George Do It, The Saint with Vincent Price, Suspense, The Whistler, Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, The Family Theater, and a slew of CBS programs. We'll hear him cross networks next in this broadcast of the 4-Star Playhouse, joined by radio actress Lorene Tuttle and movie star Robert Cummings. It's an episode called The Hunted.
Here is another in NBC's outstanding parade of new shows, dramatically transcribed. 4-Star Playhouse, a repertory company of four great Hollywood stars.
This is Robert Cumming.
This is Rosalind Russell.
This is Fred McMurray.
This is Loretta Young.
Yes, these are the stars heard weekly on Four Star Playhouse. Ladies and gentlemen, one of our four-star players and star of tonight's play, Robert Cummings.
And in behalf of Rosalind Russell, Fred McMurray, and Loretta Young, let me welcome you back to our four-star playhouse. As you know, every Sunday night at this time, Roz, Fred, Loretta, and I appear in new dramatizations of stories selected from Cosmopolitan magazine, stories by the world's leading writers of popular fiction. How often have you all had the strange, haunting experience which made you say, "It seems that all this has happened to me before"? Psychologists call that phenomenon prevision. Tonight's story explores an experience in prevision. We think it will hold you spellbound right up to its stunning and fearful finish. Prepare now for gripping action as we bring you Maurice Baudin Jr.'s strange and powerful story, The Hunted, in which I am Fred Woodard. The Hunted. I was tired. Looking for a job in a strange city wasn't doing me any good. I was hot. I felt weak. My eyes throbbed, my head swam. I had to sit down. To escape from the heat, I went into the small, air-cooled theater.
Feature picture goes on in 10 minutes, mister.
Oh, thanks, Usher.
Hot out, ain't it?
Yeah, it's terrible.
You look beat. Why don't you sit down and wait till the newsreel's over?
Oh, thanks, I will. I sat down to rest. I wasn't the only one. Across the lobby was a man, sound asleep. A man with a paunch. A man with a white scarf around his neck. And then she came in. The girl came in through the front door looking hunted and furtive. She saw the man with the paunch and started. Paunch opened his eyes and got up and walked toward her. In a panic, the girl dashed into the powder room. Paunch sat down again, closed his eyes. I didn't like it. Not a bit. Oh, Usher.
Yeah?
That guy over there with the paunch and the white scarf. A girl came in and he tried to make a pass.
Oh, forget it. Happens every day in theaters. Me, I keep my nose clean. I keep out of it.
Oh, I don't like it.
Routine. Don't let it bother you.
I glared across at the sleeping fat man. And then my head began to nod. And then there she was again, the girl. She was coming in through the front doors again, with a hunted, fearful look on her delicate face. Impulsively, I got up.
Newsreel will be over in 5 more minutes.
Oh, excuse me.
Please, I'm in a hurry.
Yes, I know, and that man sleeping over there, that fellow with the white scarf, is bothering you.
Who are you?
You wouldn't know me. I'm a stranger in town.
He isn't asleep. He's pretending.
Let me speak to him.
No.
Is he bothering you?
He's following me. He's everywhere. I tried to hide in here.
Give me these parcels. We'll walk out here together. He won't follow us.
He will.
Come on. Don't look back.
He's getting up.
How do you know?
I see him in the mirror as he's following.
Well, let him.
Mister. He looks fat, but he's quick.
Well, then we'll ride. Let's see. Taxi! Taxi! My name's Fred Woodard.
I'm Ruth.
Are you listed that way in the telephone book?
Just Ruth, if you don't mind.
Okay, Ruth. Oh, driver, this is all right. We'll get out here. Here, take my hand.
Thanks.
Okay, driver, how much do
I... Fred! It's him.
I look back. The paunch was getting out of a taxi and paying his fare without even glancing at us. And then he stood at the curb and lighting a cigarette, ignoring us, but knowing we were there. Knowing we would always be there. Here, driver, keep the change. Come on, Ruth. He can ride as fast as we can, but he can't walk as fast.
Oh, can't he?
Let me go back and smack him so he stays smacked.
No, that wouldn't do any good.
Still behind us.
No matter how fast we walk, he keeps the same distance.
I'm going back and talk to White Scarf.
Don't.
Well, why?
He said you wouldn't ask.
All right, but...
Hurry.
I'm hurrying.
Run! I can't go any further.
No, not at this pace.
Oh. Let me sit down on this bench.
Oh, it's all pretty strange.
I'm sorry.
Maybe you'll tell me about it someday.
Maybe.
Hey.
What?
Hey, surprise.
What?
We've lost White Scar.
Yes.
Well, now what should we do? How about lunch? When did you eat?
Ages ago.
Well, let's eat. I feel good again. I don't remember ordering this iced coffee, did I?
You did, and very plainly.
That's funny. Obviously, you're too much for my presence of mind.
I hope you won't regret our meeting.
Oh, it's highly unlikely. Say, do you realize how rudely other men in this restaurant are staring at you and wishing they were me? Now, just glance about you modestly and... No. Don't.
Is it?
White Scar. Five tables behind you. No, no, don't turn around. Now, just smile and look animated, and I'll do the same. Now, here's what we're going to do. I'll tell you when to look up at the clock and exclaim about the time.
Yes.
And I'll stand up and say goodbye. All smiles, just like this, see? And we'll part like old friends, going to see each other again. Make up something as you leave.
All right. What about you?
I'll stay right here.
He'll follow me.
And I'll follow him. I don't think he'll like that.
He'll know you're following him.
I want him to know. Now, look up at the clock.
Yes. Oh, dear, look at that time. I really must go now, Mr. Woodard.
He's getting up to go, too.
Of course.
Well, I'll meet you afterwards.
Wheelock's department store, the information desk.
What time?
I'll be there in exactly an hour if I'm not followed.
Meet you there in 1 hour. Okay. Give me a big goodbye now.
Oh, it's been awfully nice, Mr. Woodard. Maybe we can do this again soon.
Well, yes, Friday.
Good.
Well, it's a date.
Goodbye. See you Friday.
Right. And here comes White Scott, right on schedule. Got a match, friend?
Will you speak to me?
Match?
No.
Going someplace?
Yes.
Why are you following that girl?
What girl?
You know what girl.
Point her up to me.
Why, she's gone, isn't she?
You think I've lost her, huh?
Who?
The girl.
What girl?
Who knows?
Well, we must do this again sometime.
Not too often.
Well, that's up to you, isn't it?
Good afternoon, fool.
He walked out, obviously no longer following Ruth. Her trail was lost. I was pleased with myself, so pleased that I could hardly wait for the hour to pass to tell Ruth that I'd shaken White Scar. I went to Wheelock's department store. I waited for her at the information desk.
Oh, there you are, Fred. Here's some packages for you. Are you getting bored or tired?
Bored? No. Didn't you see the excitement?
Excitement? No.
Well, it seems someone lifted a dagger at the antique jewelry counter and they just found out a few minutes ago. More confusion.
Oh. Well, I'll be back again soon with more packages. Do you mind? Don't go away or get lost, will you?
Don't worry.
Cash, boy.
Okay, sucker. Come along.
Who?
Come on.
White Scarf.
Let's go.
Well, you found us again.
If one knows where to look, one finds.
What do you mean by shadowing us this way?
We ask the questions. Now, come along.
Where?
Upstairs.
Who are you?
Guess.
The police.
Come on. Your lady friend's waiting for you.
Lady friend?
Come on.
I remembered vaguely reading something like this in the past. But what was it? I'd forgotten. White Scarf took me upstairs to a bare room with a single desk. I saw Ruth staring at the floor. She didn't look up. There was a pile of parcels on the desk. Behind the desk stood a tall, blonde man, about 35. He started speaking the moment White Scarf pushed me into the room.
The first thing you better do is empty out your pockets.
You're not talking to me.
He's talking to you.
Better do it.
What are you raving about?
You'll find some things in your pockets that don't belong to you.
They belong to Wheelock's department store.
Well, good Lord.
Put the watch in the desk, Woodard.
I don't know how it got there.
What else is there?
Well, this gold cigarette lighter.
On the desk.
I never saw these things before.
See here. Don't deny you're Ruth's accomplice.
Accomplice? Why, I... Ruth.
He's a shoplifter.
Shut up.
Just remarking, Murray.
Remark when you're asked to remark.
Well, listen, wait, this is crazy. You're saying that Ruth is a thief and I helped her steal?
There's some excuse for Ruth, but there's none for you.
Oh, please, Ruth. Don't, darling.
I don't know why I do it. I can't help it, Murray. I can't help it. I don't realize I do it.
All these things are stolen.
Things on you were.
But I knew nothing about it. Ruth, tell them.
Miss Fleming cannot answer for anything she does. You can.
Who are you?
Miss Fleming is not an ordinary thief. If she were, this would be for the police. If matters stand, the stores permit me to make an adjustment on the merchandise she appropriates.
She is in the clear. You'll get it, though.
Well, this is crazy. I didn't realize what she was up to.
You'll serve her sentence, too.
Shut up! Take her to the next room. Come on.
Look, I'm not a thief. I'm not a thief.
And I'm not the police. But I am that poor girl's fiancé.
Fiancé?
I've been doing everything in my power. Everything within the power of love and modern medicine to help Ruth. To cure her of her kleptomania. And when a sniveling, lying crook like you takes advantage of her and breaks down everything I've accomplished...
Stop it! Oh, cut it out. She was in trouble. That fellow with the scarf was following her. She wanted my help.
I hired him to protect Ruth against herself. And against weasels like you.
You know what you're talking about. I tell you...
I'm going to put you where you won't prey on sick and helpless people.
Don't touch that telephone. Put it down, I tell you.
I'm going to put you where you can't pull your low, sneaking trick.
Drop it. Drop that phone.
Operator, get me the police.
Oh, I warned you. I warned you. I won't be framed. I won't. No one frames me like that. You hear? No one.
You must trust me. Fred!
All right. I'm coming. Are you alone?
Yes.
Well, come in.
Oh, Fred, I'm so terribly sorry I got you into all this. I didn't mean for you to get into trouble. I never in the world would have wanted that.
Well, you did steal those things.
Yes.
Well, why?
I don't know. I can't help it. I don't ever remember stealing them, but I do. And they watch me and they try to prevent me. Murray pays for the things I steal. He's been so good, so kind. And now...
He was calling the police in on me.
I know. I don't blame you for what you did, not entirely.
Well, I let him have it.
It was my fault, too.
I let him have it, all right.
Oh, why? Why did you do it?
I don't know. I lost my head. I'd have gone to the police myself, but... Well, there was something funny about what was going on. Some kind of a frame. White Scarf was too happy about sending someone up. But I wasn't going to be railroaded. I'm new in this town. I'm green. I can't take chances where I've got nobody to fight for me.
I know.
I'd rot here in jail.
I know. But you didn't have to kill him.
Kill him? Kill who?
Don't deny it. White Scarf went into the room when he heard you and Murray fight. Murray was on the floor...
I didn't kill him, no.
Don't deny it. You stabbed him with that dagger I gave you, the dagger I stole at Wheelock's.
You stole that dagger.
I must have stolen it. I stole it and I gave it to you.
No, you didn't.
I must have. You stabbed Murray with it.
No, there must be some horrible, I couldn't have, I, some mistakes, some...
Oh, stop lying, stop pretending. I'm not blaming you. I gave you the dagger. I stole it and gave it to you. But you should have given it up for the other thing.
I've got to get out of this.
I I had to come here before they find out where you stay.
Before they find out where... How did you know where I'm staying? I didn't tell you.
I'm so ashamed.
I ask you something.
I know.
I ask you how you knew I was at this hotel.
There was a Tate hotel bill in your wallet.
My wallet? Well, how did... Oh.
I must have stolen it from... Perhaps in the store.
Oh.
Here, take it. Everything's there.
You didn't tell them?
No, no. I wanted you to have some chance. I wanted to do something for you.
What? Bring Murray to life?
I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, wait. Let me think. I've got to try to think.
Whatever I can do, anything at all, tell me. I'm so to blame for things. So tell me if I can...
I don't know. How long did you know Murray?
2 years. We were to be married soon, even before I was cured.
How do I know you didn't kill him?
I?
How do I know you didn't keep the dagger and kill him yourself? How do I know you're not trying to pin something on me?
No. Why would I kill Murray? Would I murder the man I love?
I don't know. Maybe the man you love, you hate.
But why?
I don't know why.
Shout. We'll be heard.
Oh, this whole crazy nightmare I've stumbled into. When will it end? Where does it all lead to?
If I killed Murray, would I try to help you? He was doing so much for me, and he loved me so much. And tonight we were going someplace special.
Where?
It doesn't matter.
I don't know if it matters or not. I've got to ask questions. I've got to keep moving in my mind or I'll crack wide open. Where were you going with Murray tonight? It just might matter.
There was to be a party at Maggie Bolton's. You know Maggie Bolton.
I don't know anyone or anything. I'm new around here.
Once a year she gives a big party and wears the Bolton necklace.
Wasn't Murray afraid you'd steal the necklace, too, right off of her throat?
Stop it!
Wait. Wait, that's something.
What is?
I'm not sure. Murray's being killed just today, the day of the party. I don't know. Maybe.
But you killed him.
Or you did. You never gave me that dagger.
I had no motive. I loved him.
You were going to the Bolton party tonight and see the necklace?
I had nothing to do with it. Nothing whatever.
We're going to that party tonight.
You'll be picked up by the police.
Not unless you tell them I'm there.
I won't.
I don't know what I'm trying to find out. I just know I've got to keep moving and doing or I'll go crazy. Where's this Bolton place? We arrived too late for the party. Too late to see the famous Bolton diamond necklace on the famous Bolton throat. There was some excitement about the house when we drove up in the hired car. I left Ruth in the car and walked up the driveway, curving around into the darkness, and stopped short. Police cars. All around the house. I turned and began to walk down the driveway again.
Hey, you!
I began running.
Hey, stop!
In a panic, I plunged off the drive into the thick tangle of cypress that covers the huge ground.
Hey, you!
I lost the cop. In the dark, dense jungle of cypress, I even lost myself. And then something stepped out of the darkness. Something in a white scarf with flat, dead eyes and a toneless smile and that faintly foreign voice. White scarf.
Don't move. I want to talk to you.
Talk what?
I want to talk to you.
Well, there's nothing to talk about.
Theft is nothing?
Well, I didn't steal.
Murder is nothing?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Murray Lister.
Why? I don't know anything about Murray Lister.
You also deny that you strangled Maggie Bolton in the solarium an hour ago.
No, I tell you, I didn't have anything to do with it. Well, I didn't even know she'd been killed.
You didn't know she'd been killed? No.
No. You're not going to pin that on me, too. I didn't come near her. I just arrived. Say, how did you know it was an hour ago?
Because I strangled her.
You?
I.
Who are you?
I will tell you so that you will have the caution and the self-interest to cooperate with me.
I don't know how. Cooperate how? What?
In
what?
Delivering the Bolton necklace to me.
I tell you, I don't know anything about it.
Then let me sharpen your understanding of it. I killed Mrs. Bolton when she refused to tell me where the necklace was. I strangled her.
Strangled?
With this white silk scarf.
I don't...
I'm a Apache, you know. French Apache. I also stabbed Murray Lister.
Of course. You went in alone after I knocked him down. Of course.
Of course. I also stole all the things that Ruth Fleming is accused of stealing. Now we will put these together and it will become a diamond necklace for me. Huh?
You're crazy.
No.
You're crazy, Killy. You're crazy. You're crazy.
No. Mary Lister had me to plant stolen things on Ruth to make her think she was a kleptomaniac.
She doesn't steal?
I do. I stole and planted your wallet on her. I stole the dagger and planted it on Mary Lister.
But why?
Mary was preparing with Fleming to take the blame one day for the theft of the Bolton necklace. That simple. I helped prepare her. But today I thought, why work for Mary Lister when I can go into business for myself?
You stabbed a man and strangled Maggie Bolton.
I tell you this so you'll be warned. Now, you will reply to my questions, or...
Don't stop my...
There you see. The white scarf about your throat. Enough.
Enough.
Be warned.
I can't help you. I don't know anything.
You do.
No.
You lie. Why do you lie when you know how unwise it is to lie to me? The strangler. Huh? Now, where is the necklace?
I don't know.
Do you want to die? Do you want your eyes to stick out of your head? Do you want your tongue to go purple in your mouth? Well, do you?
No, listen to me. You got to listen to me.
An end to these lies.
No, I'm new in this town. I just came in last week. I picked up this girl, Ruth Fleming, in the theater lobby. I didn't know anything about her, anything about...
Enough.
No, listen.
An end to talk.
Wait, don't. Listen.
Time now to act.
Stop. Stop.
Hey, you see.
Don't.
He strangles.
Let that go.
The Apache way. The way of Paris, Apache. Vous savez?
No.
Die. Die.
Excuse me, mister.
What?
What's the matter? Wake up. You're dreaming? Newsreel's over. Feature picture's gonna start.
Huh?
Wake up. You fell asleep in the lobby. You bought a ticket. Don't you want to see the show?
I dragged myself back to consciousness. In seconds, the fabric of my awful dream unraveled and vanished. I was drenched in cold sweat, but overwhelmed with relief. And across the lobby, sleeping harmlessly, was the paunchy man with the white scarf who had helped inspire my dream, or whatever it was. And then the door of the powder room opened, and there was the girl, the Ruth of my dream, with a pale dread on her face. I got up quickly and eagerly to make the acquaintance of the real-life Ruth, or whatever her real name was.
Tickets in the box, lady.
Oh, excuse me.
What?
But, I know you'll think that this is the usual approach by a stranger, but... Didn't all this happen before?
What do you mean?
But it just seems that we met before. Just this way.
I don't think so.
Well, the feature picture's about to start. Might I join you?
Oh, I couldn't. I mean... Well...
Oh, I'm sure this all happened before. Even the scared look you just gave that paunchy man sleeping there.
Well, if you like, we could go in together, yes.
Thank you. Yeah, the honest feeling, really.
I've had that feeling, too, sometimes. Everybody has.
We went up the steps, talking and laughing. I held open the door leading into the cool dark of the balcony and stared. Below in the lobby, I saw the paunchy man slowly open his eyes and look up at us. He got up and with surprising agility began following us with rapid, ruthless steps. A man with a paunch, an olive skin, and a dead smile, and a white silk scarf draped loosely about his neck, following us.
Star Playhouse, Robert Cummings speaking.
Bob, this is Rosalind Russell with a very urgent question.
Ros, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. I tell you, I was framed. What urgent question?
What happened to you after you picked that girl up in the lobby the second time? Did you meet White Scarf in Cyprus again? How did that come out?
Oh, I was choked to death. Next question?
Well, will you listen to me next Sunday when I do The Incredible Anna Lee? It's about a Hollywood motion picture actress, Anna Lee, a lovely and unpredictable ham who inflicts herself on films and on her press agent. How our ham becomes cured and our guy gets contented is the substance of next week's opera.
Roz, it sounds very inviting, and I'll recommend Russell's remarkable recipe for radio enjoyment to all my friends.
Thanks, Bob. And incidentally, thrilling show tonight. Bye, Bob.
Thanks, Roz, and thanks for calling. Au revoir, Roz. And good night, everybody, and thank you for calling. Call again next Sunday, huh? Night.
You have been listening to Four Star Playhouse, tonight starring Robert Cummings in The Hunted, written by Maurice Bodin, Jr., and adapted for radio by Milton Geiger. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
The Four Star Playhouse on Tuned to Yesterday from August 14th, 1949 on NBC. And that brings to an end this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVillier. Thanks for listening.